People can click that, and it reports the match to us, and then we can remove
So if
it.
I just start doing, like, ASCII penises in all my matches,
You'll probably win. You'll almost win.
Right. Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 153, and we have a very special guest all podcast with us, which is abnormal.
Yes.
I feel weird.
You're not saying Sean is abnormal. You're saying that it's abnormal to have a guest.
I mean, both. You can kind of go both ways.
Yeah, it's like a little bit each way.
So, yeah, Sean Baptiste from Firehose Games is here. Hello, hey, welcome back. You've been on the last couple ones.
I was on last week for Billionaire Banshee, and I think I was on a few months ago.
It's all a blur, but welcome back.
It's good to be back. It feels like I never left.
Oh, man. It's been a busy couple weeks. Matt is still unpacking his life in boxes, I'm assuming.
Yep.
And my house is messy now, too. We won't get into that. But everything's going good. The year's wrapping up.
Yeah.
You know, summer is approaching for me. I still get summer break because I pretend to be a teenager.
I like it when you say things like the year is wrapping up or what are you guys doing this summer or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Yeah.
We're always we're going to continue.
It's like an illusionary world where that's normal. But yeah, like summer break's coming, guys. I get to go travel and stuff.
Yeah, when you said the year's wrapping up, I'm like, does he know something I don't?
Yeah, yeah. I know.
The end.
I'm on it. It's true. It's true.
Let's do the rundown.
Let's talk about what we're going to do on the show today.
Yeah, do the rundown.
Sounds good. It's been a while. We haven't done the normal format in such a long time. It's really strange. Okay. So with that being said, today on the podcast, we're going to talk about what we've been up to. We're going to talk about the new changes coming to Xbox Live and the Xbox One system. And we're going to talk to Sean about Let's Quip, which is going to be awesome. And then we're also going to talk about the new Titanfall Expedition DLC. And I played a game that Matt and I love from PAX East called Cosmic DJ. And then maybe we'll talk about some other stuff, time permitting. And then in our Nerquato this week, with Gotham, Flash, and Arrow all airing on TV shows this fall, which hero or team would you like to see get a TV debut? I like that Nerquato.
Yes. We got some good answers.
Yeah, it's cool that like kind of comic and fantasy seems to be having a stronger presence on television recently.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with things like Once Upon a Time and those kinds of shows as well, in addition to the superhero shows. So that'll be fun.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And today's episode is brought to us by Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 150,000 titles to choose from in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. Get a free audiobook and help out the podcast by going to www.audibletrial.com/ratedNA, all one word. Have you guys listened to anything lately? You got any recommendations or no?
You know what I would recommend is, I'm assuming they're on there. I haven't searched particularly, but a while ago you got me a couple of audiobooks for James Bond novels, Ian Fleming novels.
Oh, yeah?
And those are really good. So yeah. I would say that, and what's interesting is if you've never read Ian Fleming but you've only seen the Bond movies, the thing about Ian Fleming is that he goes into a lot of, I wouldn't even call it exposition. He goes into a lot of detail about things that don't necessarily need a lot of detail. So in one of the books, James Bond finds a shipping manifest, and instead of just going like, and then Bond found a shipping manifest, Ian Fleming will write down every single thing that's on the shipping manifest. So it would probably be better to listen to those things than it would be to actually read them yourself. So
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, in the reader that was on the two books that Matt got for me was a really good reader too. So hopefully that's the same person, but I would recommend Ian Fleming's James Bond novels on Audible if they're available, and I'm assuming they are.
That is
been auditioning for narrating books on Audible.
Oh really?
Yeah, cool. I'm a huge fan of what they're doing over there. They do awesome stuff.
That is really cool.
What is the audition process?
They have a website, actually, called acx.com, and it's where aspiring audiobook narrators and producers and writers can all sort of meet each other and then audition for each other's books. People put up audition scripts, and it's really cool, and then work out sort of like revenue share and stuff. It's an awesome site. Yeah, if you're interested in it, you should definitely check it out. It's a really cool site.
That is really cool.
And I did just confirm that those Ian Fleming novels are on Audible. It's Simon Vance is the reader of those books, so I'd recommend those for sure.
Confirmed, everybody. That's awesome.
Confirmed. Awesome. Indeed.
So, Ash, what have you been up to?
I guess the first thing, I meant to talk about this last week, but I've been listening to these podcasts called Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, and I'm not going to get into too much detail, but as someone who loves history, this guy, like, if you never want to go to college and you just want to know everything about history, you could honestly listen to this podcast and be infinitely entertained and learn everything there is to know about the history of the world. The one I'm listening to right now is called Blueprint for Armageddon, and it's 9 hours long. It's broken into three different sections, and he talks about the chain of events that basically makes World War I start, and that leads to World War II and, you know, the Cold War. But he goes into such great detail, and he reads it almost like you're listening to an audiobook. So it's not like you're listening to a lecture. It's just filled with like tons of extra information, and he goes into detail about all the different characters and their personalities and who their parents were and why they may have done the things that they've done. And it's so well done, and I've been so entertained by that in the past couple weeks. I've been listening to that on my drives. In terms of game playing stuff, I played Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, which came out, I want to say, maybe in March, and I just got around to playing it now because I'd been hearing, you know, it's very short and da-da-da-da. But, you know, it's on sale now all over the place, so I picked it up, and it's awesome. I'm really excited now for Phantom Pain. It's kind of a prequel to Phantom Pain. It tells you where Snake slash Big Boss, or how he ends up all messed up in the beginning of that Phantom Pain trailer. But the thing that really gets me excited about this game the most, or about Phantom Pain the most, is that finally the system in Metal Gear works. Like, my big qualm with the Metal Gear games is that the controls were always overly complicated and a little bit clunky. Mm-hmm. And there's always just too much to do with your hands. There's a button to, like, interrogate somebody and a button to choke somebody out. And then you had to, like, hold down R2 and then, like, press to the right to roll while pressing the triangle button to draw your weapon and then the X to shoot it. And you're just like, what the fuck? I cannot play finger Jenga in order to actually play this game. Like, I don't even know what the hell's going on. But they fixed all that with the new Metal Gear engine and such. So it works much, much better now. It looks gorgeous. The environments are really nice. It has the new Fox engine. And I'm really, excited. I don't know what in the hell the game is about. I really tried hard. I, like, read all the stuff that came with it and looked through the codex. And I'm just like, I still don't, for the life of me, know who's a clone of who or, what really is going on.
It's good to know that it's still a Metal Gear game,
though. It is still a Metal Gear game. Yeah, it still doesn't make any sense. It had some really gorgeous – I know a lot of people complain about the cutscenes and – say cutscenes aren't really a game, but the in-engine cutscenes are really, really sharp now, and I got really into it, so I'm excited for Phantom Pain when it eventually comes out. And
let me ask you two questions about it real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Question one is that me knowing very little about Metal Gear Solid,
yeah.
Could a person who is not have prior exposure with the series enjoy this game, and maybe what will follow this game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's kind of meant to be an introduction to the character of Snake and kind of what he's all about. I mean, and it's not a spoiler or anything, but the mission is just a single mission, and it's you have to break into this airbase, and you have to rescue some people in the airbase, which is fine. But the thing that's great about it is for the first time it's ever, it's kind of more sandboxy.
Yeah.
So you can walk around the entire airbase and basically go about the mission in any way that you want. So that's makes great. It really exciting because you can, you can go in guns blazing and just fight waves and waves of enemies to rescue the people, or you can be completely stealthy and and, you know, be a super ninja, which is awesome. So, cool. You know, the Ground Zeroes warrants multiple playthroughs. There's different ways to tackle it. You unlock some stuff when you beat it. I would definitely say, I'd definitely say it's worth like $20.
Yeah.
That was my other question. Yeah.
My other question was,
it's a glorified demo. It really is just a glorified demo. But it is a good, you know, 2-3 hours of gameplay. But if you want to get your hands on, you know, what Phantom Pain is going to be like, then it's definitely worth it.
And then on the box it says that by playing this or owning it or something, you unlock some content for the Phantom Pain when that comes out.
Oh, is that the case? I didn't even see that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it's... I think that was part of the appeal of, like, buying the game and hanging on to it is, like, somewhere on the box art it says something like, unlock bonus items in Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain.
Okay. Yeah. They always love doing stuff like that.
Was there anything, like, in the box or on the disc that alluded to that?
I don't even remember, to be honest. I blew through it so quickly. I don't even know what I saw. Another last thing is you and I played some Titanfall Expedition, which we're going to talk about, I guess, in the review section.
Yes,
but,
sir.
They added some really nice stuff. They made the game a little bit more accessible, made fixed some of the little speed bumps along the way, and added some new maps. So we'll talk about that, and it was a lot of fun. Let's go to Matt next.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Sorry, I was seeing a man about a horse there for a second.
Oh, not again.
Wow.
Just kidding.
So much.
Just kidding, everybody.
Wear yourself out.
There's no horse here. anyways, I have been continuing to unpack my life in a new place. I got all my stuff set up, and I can't find my Xbox One controller. All I can do is watch TV through it currently, which is really great. Really enjoying that. Time Warner is wonderful. Hope they sponsor the show. let's see. I've been catching up on Game of Thrones some more, so I'm like firmly into season 3, I think, now.
Ooh,
somewhere.
Nice.
So like 3 or 4 episodes into that, which is... I still maintain that this is not the greatest show ever created. I think it's a really great hype machine. I think it does a very good job of like ending episodes and making people want to watch more, but not necessarily being like, I don't know. There's just a lot to that. I'm like, okay. If you see it outside of the whole scope of everyone freaking out about what's happening, I don't think it is as impactful as it is when you watch it along with like millions of other people that are freaking out on the internet simultaneously about it. But it's good. It's enjoyable. I actually like it more now because it's getting a little bit more into the like the fantasy stuff and less sort of political drama, if you will.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I was talking to our friend Ryan about it, and I was saying that I like House of Cards as a political drama because it feels grossly real. Like, I feel like that probably, that kind of crazy shit does happen in DC. Whereas this is like a fantasy world where I don't really know that I need to know every family's, like, political history for the past 150 years and how many different fathers of fathers had problems with some other fathers of fathers. And we watched the Honest trailer for it, and the funniest part that I was dying during was meet a bunch of people where they have nouns of nouns, and it's like, hello, I'm the Sword of Hands. I am the. It's like just all noun of noun all the way through. other than that, still playing a ton of Hearthstone. It really is just kind of a time killer at this point, but I'm still enjoying it, which is fun, I guess. It really is just Magic. I don't know how they got away with just making Magic the Gathering, but set in WoW, but they did. And it's fun.
The best thing is I heard that Magic, Wizards of the Coast, is suing another company that made a game that's too similar to Magic. And I'm like, have you seen Hearthstone? Because Hearthstone is Magic the Gathering.
It's identical. Even the card art looks like Magic. Like, the whole thing looks like Magic the Gathering. It's kind of amazing that this happened. It makes me wonder if they, like, approached Wizards at one point. Wizards was like, nah. And then they were like, fine, let's just do it on our own and just made Magic.
Yeah.
And then there's an old game on my phone that I've revisited because I was like looking for some stuff to play called Plague Inc. Did you guys ever play this back in the day?
So good.
Yeah, a lot of people love this game. I haven't played it, but you design your own plague and basically destroy the earth, right?
yeah. So like you just, your whole goal is to like kill off as much of mankind as you can with some sort of plague. And you start off like with bacteria and then you move into viruses, I think. And it's not horribly scientific, but it's like... It's just really fun. I don't know. It's a good toilet game, if you want to call it that, where you can kind of just play and like you earn like DNA points, and then you mutate your virus or your bacteria, their plague, like to try and get ahead of the human race to try to kill them off. It's kind of amazing. It's like this weirdly dark, fun game, but I've been playing a ton of that too.
My favorite part about that game is that it allows you to name your disease.
Yeah.
When you're going in. So I had one last week. I made one, and actually it was one of the ones that actually destroyed the world, and I took a screenshot of it on my phone because I named it Television's Glee. So at the end of the game, it just read, Television's Glee has destroyed the world despite the world's best efforts. The last few humans lie dying in holes with no chance of survival. I love that game so much.
That's amazing. That's a brilliant quote about Glee as well.
I actually named mine after, it was a callback from a few episodes ago, but after the ex-girlfriend that we talked about on the Abby Heppy interview.
Oh, really? You named yours the actual ex-girlfriend's name that we won't name?
Yeah, I won't name it, but okay, yeah, good. I used her actual name, and it won, killed the world. So
wow.
Lickety-blank, the whole world.
Killed the world with racism.
But that's about it. So a lot of stuff like unpacking is weird because you just kind of keep moving boxes from one room to the other, and slowly there's like less boxes as you move them from one room to the other. But yesterday I like went on a tear and I didn't break any of the boxes down, so my kitchen is literally stacked like 6 foot high with empty boxes at the moment, and
well,
I can't get it. I had to climb over them to make coffee this morning, but I felt like you guys deserved that. Like you deserved me making coffee so that I didn't just sit here like a grump the entire episode.
We appreciate it.
You're welcome. So, Scott, what have you been up to?
Well, since you were talking about toilet games, it reminded me that I've been playing a game on my phone called Wayward Souls, and it's like a procedurally generated dungeon crawler where every time you go through the dungeon, you earn coins, which you can use to beef up your character. So every time you die, you start over, but you get stronger and stronger, and you become a little better at the game as you repeat through it. But the real reason that I bought it is that I read an article online about the game, and what they're doing is they're selling the game for $5, and they're never going to have in-app purchases in the game. But what they are going to do is that every time they do an update to the game, they're going to raise the price of the game by $1. So I thought that was so funny, because it sort of like flies in the face of like free to play a little in like IAP and stuff like that. And I just thought that was so interesting that I was like, yeah, sure, I'll support that. I'll buy this game because that's so bizarre. Because, you know, 2 years from now, this game could be $9.99 in, you know, for no reason, which is so bizarre. So I was so mystified by that I decided to play the game. But it's really fun. It's you know, if you've ever played any kind of like it says they're inspired by Secret of Mana, in their previous game called Mage Gauntlet. So it's fun. It just has the
Mage Gauntlet was really good.
Yeah, and it's got it's got the touch screen controls, but there's no UI on the screen, so it's kind of all kind of works, and it plays well, and it's fun. So I enjoy that. On the Xbox One, when I'm like want to play something, but I don't have the mental capacity to handle something like Titanfall, I've been playing Peggle 2, and even though I swore off getting achievements for everything, as I played this game, I realized that I completed all but two of the achievements. So I completed the game last night, and
nice.
It's so addicting. And I think I got my wife addicted to Peggle 2, which is
that's a good thing. She needs to be more addicted to things.
Yeah, it's cool. And then still playing Hitman Go on the iPad, which is like my Hearthstone. Yeah, Matt and I love that game. Matt discovered
it. I still bounce to it every once in a while, but yeah. Hearthstone's been more.
It is just really good. It's amazing what you can do with no animation, just kind of like posing the plastic figurines in a certain way to convey what is happening in the scene. I think that's really clever.
Have you played this, Sean?
No, I haven't yet. I'm waiting. I'm on Android.
Right. Yeah.
So fine. I actually, it's coming to Android, but it's a little bit slow. I have an old iOS phone, and the only thing I've been able to play on that is Record Run.
True.
I tried Record Run. It was awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. But yeah, I haven't been able to try Hitman Go yet. I'm waiting. As soon as it comes out on Android, I'm going to be all over that.
Yeah, I think it's something you would dig. It's like a cool take on puzzles and art, and everything is cool.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly good. Yeah, it's really great. And then finally, I played, like Ash said, we played some Titanfall last night. It was my first time playing Titanfall in a month or so. So it was really nice to come back to that, and they fixed a bunch of stuff, and we'll talk about that later. And then another game that Matt told me about at PAX East was a game called Cosmic DJ, which we both ended up playing the game, and now they are in Steam Early Access, so I got a chance to check that out, and I will talk about that later in the reviews. And it's really fun. It's really great. I can't wait.
I wanted to note something really fast.
Yeah.
You said that Hitman Go is surprisingly good, and I find it interesting that our take on mobile games that come out for like iPad or anything like that, that are made by these huge, you know, publishing warehouses kind of thing, I think our assumption is always that they're going to be terrible. And that when they're good, they're like, oh, it's surprisingly good. Because it's just not their forte. It's like, that's not what they make. So when you see a game like this that comes out that's unique and a different take on an existing IP and done well, like, it is kind of surprising to me. I find that really interesting that you said it. But
yeah, I mean, it just sort of foregoes all of the common themes of other games that are put out by large publishers. Like,
well, because you'd think it'd be like Twin Stick, you know, like...
Yeah.
Sneak up on a guy and murder him kind of thing, and it's absolutely not like they didn't just take the game and try to put it on an iPad, you know?
And it doesn't do other weird stuff. It's like, it doesn't link to your Square Enix account, it doesn't unlock any content in the Hitman games, it doesn't do anything. It's just, it's like a game that stands on its own, and I think that's the surprising part,
right?
And then the other part is, of course, that it ends up being a really good game, so it stands on its own, and I think that's what's really impressive about it.
No, I just thought it was interesting, because I agree in a lot of ways that I don't know. Yeah, that's cool.
Cool. So that brings us to Sean, our guest.
Guest of the hour.
So what's going on, man? I mean, you were here last week, so what have you been up to this week?
It's weird. I want to play console games, but being in the process of trying to finish a game and ship it actually kind of limits my time and also my desire to play games in a lot of times. I did try out Child of Light. For console, I tried it on my PS3. I think it's beautiful. It's got a rhyme. Everything is written in this rhyme scheme that isn't good at all. It's like, it's clearly like a decision. They were like, we're gonna make a rhyme scheme, and then they just stuck to their guns.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't have, because it actually kind of ruins the experience, because they're so busy trying to rhyme that they're not trying to develop the characters, because they're just trying to find what it's like children's first rhyme, and there's like a cool plot, but you can't ever really get to it because you have to read through this thing that's
decipher it. I felt exactly the same way, and I love you for feeling that way. I'm like, am I just an asshole? Like, am I a dick?
It's everything about it is so beautiful, and I like the puzzles, and like the aesthetic of the game is incredible. But I just can't get into it because of the way it's written. It's too, and it's not like I'm somebody who doesn't like poetry. I love poetry. This isn't poetry. This is just like kindergartner rhyming. there's no meter or rhythm to it. It's just like, take two words, try to rhyme. It's really hard to deal with, especially as somebody who enjoys the written word. But I have been playing a lot of games on my phone. Lately that seems to be just sort of what I do. Kairosoft recently, they made like Game Dev Story and a bunch of other games. Every game they put out is
good things about that.
They are crack to me. Like when they put out a game, that's what I do. I just take their game and I play it for days on end, and that's all I do. And they just recently put out one game called, or recently translated it to English. It had been out in Japan for a while, but it's called Magazine Mogul. And it's exactly like Game Dev Story, except you're trying to create a magazine every month, and it's really interesting, and it's a fun game. I've been into it. What else have I been playing? Oh, also I've been playing this game called New Soccer Star.
Okay.
Where you just sort of, it's like MLB The Show, but for soccer, and without any of the graphics. You just control one soccer player and you sign different deals, and they actually have an interesting way. So you only play when the ball comes to you in the game. And the way you do that is by like clicking on the ball and then sort of dragging it and trying to get the trajectory. And then it goes to this thing. You're trying to click the right place or tap the right place on the soccer ball to make it go. And it's really interesting. It's really fun. They're clearly monetizing it, but they do it in a really cool, like in a way that seems very fair and honest. So hopefully they're making their money, but yeah, I it's really, 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 really good. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, speaking of other things that you can, I don't know.
Hillary was really good at these.
Yeah.
We just use pre-recorded Hillary lines for these transitions, like right? A Hillary soundboard.
We'll have to go back to the Hillary soundboard and we'll figure out what to do.
I like it.
News.
But anyways, let's get to the news, everybody.
Yeah.
All right. So this week, I think it was this week, Xbox announced a bunch of news, a bunch of changes coming to Xbox Live Gold and the way it works in general. So probably the biggest items are that they're going to start selling an Xbox One without the Kinect.
Yeah.
Which is
June 9th.
Yeah. Starting in June. And like, I thought it was funny that a certain blog was quick to post a story about what certain Harmonix employees were tweeting in reaction to this news. because, you know, the whole thing with the Kinect is that it was sold as sort of an integral part of the Xbox One experience, and then by doing so, by ensuring to developers that every person would have a Kinect, it would be easier to develop games that use a Kinect because everyone's going to have one. Yeah. Unlike
higher install base.
Yeah, unlike the PS4, where it's like, well, not everyone's going to have one. You don't really know if people are going to get it, so you know there's a certain risk in making games for it and stuff like that. So now it's kind of like, you know, like we've been saying this whole time, I feel like Xbox One and PlayStation 4 are like fighting to be the same system, which I think in the end offers fewer choices for consumers. Although, you know, sort of in a contradictory way, you now have a choice to buy a Kinect or not. But
yeah,
this might also hinder your ability to see more games that use the Kinect in the future. You know,
you probably won't see many at all, really.
Honestly,
you know, Kinect Sports Rivals sort of got some lackluster reviews. But, you know, people are excited for Fantasia Music Evolve, but, like, what does this mean for Harmonix, for example? That was one of the key ingredients there of that story, so...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's doing the PlayStation move, right? Here's a cheaper, hampered Xbox.
Yeah, they have to compete.
Yeah, so...
But that being said,
I think it's more that they told developers that this is what they're like, you know, that they were told developers that everybody is going to have a Kinect and then, you know, leave developers hanging, I think is.
Yeah,
that's true.
That does sort of burn your partners in a lot of ways. That isn't cool. I mean, ultimately, it's a business decision. I'm sure they had to make it, but
yeah,
that's rough on the people it ends up affecting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they thought they were developing, you know, for X number of people, and they're only going to be developing for, you know, it turns out to be a much smaller audience because I know a lot of people that when that was announced, they got very, very excited because they just weren't sold on the Kinect and they weren't sold with what, you know, third-party developers had been doing with the Kinect. I enjoy the Kinect, but I don't feel like it really has been utilized to its potential as of yet. So I think that's the problem. It needed to have like a game out of the gate that was just fucking mind blowing and it didn't do it.
Oh, they needed Harmonix out of the gate, right?
Yeah. That's why with the first Kinect, it was Harmonix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like if you looked at that spate of games for that, and I know I used to work there, so I'm a little bit biased, but like that first spate of Kinect games for Xbox 360, almost to a game were garbage with the exception of Dance Central, which legitimately like figured out how to make it so you could maneuver through menus and like made it all seem so simple and just work. And yeah, like you need a company that really takes it seriously to do it. And yeah, that's sort of the bummer.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe the gamble here is that just like, you know, what I've heard is that when you buy a PlayStation 4, people will want to go get that camera so they can do Twitch streaming. So maybe, again, Twitch streaming will be sort of the mainstream avenue to buying a Kinect. But then you'll find out that you can do all that other stuff, like controlling the TV with your voice, saying, you know, Xbox record that. I personally use the Xbox Fitness app all the time, which I think is awesome. It's not a game, obviously, so it doesn't have, like, that kind of appeal. But I think it works really well, and it's really good. But, again, there's not, like, a game to go along with that. But
well, plus when you're having a bummer of a day and you walk in, you sit down on your couch and it says, "Hi, Matt." And you're like, "Hey, Xbox, how are you doing?"
Yeah. That's always nice too. The other piece of news is they are removing the paywall for Xbox Live Gold in order to access certain apps like Netflix and Hulu and stuff like that. Yeah. So on the Xbox 360, if you wanted to access Netflix and Hulu and similar apps, you needed to have an Xbox Live Gold subscription, and you don't need to have that anymore. And then the other piece of news is that Games with Gold is coming to Xbox One, but the part that's sort of buried in the story there is that it's going to function now the way that sort of like PlayStation Plus does. So as long as you remain a subscriber, you can access the games that you get with Games with Gold for Xbox One, unlike the way it is on the 360 now, where if you are a subscriber, you download the game and then you own it even after your subscription expires. So that's kind of why I said that the two systems are sort of just becoming the same system.
Well, I mean, we've been talking about this since they announced the consoles, though, that they're just slowly turning into the same machines, essentially.
Yeah.
Because PlayStation was like, we're not going to do any of that. Oh, by the way, you need a PlayStation Plus account to get to multiplayer game. And it was like, oh, we're just turning into the same thing.
Yeah. And now we've sort of wound up with like a tiny incremental jump between the last gen and the current gen in terms of the way, you know, the way things work. But but what this could mean for Xbox is that they might be able to get better and or more current games to Games with Gold.
Games with Gold.
Yeah, because you know, PlayStation would go like, oh, here's Remember Me. This game came out 2 months ago, and now you can get it for free.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Well, I think that one kind of has to do that, right? Because there's just not enough back catalog to really have worthwhile games on it.
Yeah, and the first two games that they announced are going to be Halo Spartan Assault, which you can get on any Windows platform. And then Max, the Curse of Brotherhood. But I suspect that we'll see things like the launch titles, like Rise, Son of Rome. I even think that Garden Warfare will probably be one of those
games. They already announced they're doing free-to-play with that, just like you said, Scott.
Oh, I mean, they're gonna go to free-to-play with that?
I think so, yeah. I mean, they already announced microtransactions, I think, like last week. So.
Yeah, you can buy those packs now with real money, like Mass Effect style. So
yeah,
I could see that becoming one of those games as well. And then sort of to celebrate the first year of Games with Gold, they're going to do three games in June. Actually, the game right now is Saints Row 3, which is a great game. And then on 360 in June, it's going to be Dark Souls, Charlie Murder, and then the bonus game is Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition.
Which is an excellent game.
Yeah, so to get those three games for free on the 360 and then two more on the Xbox One in June, that's kind of awesome. So
it's not too bad, yeah.
A lot of free games for $10.
I don't know about you guys, but for me, that's probably more games than I can play in the span of a month. So,
yeah,
I'm highly satisfied. And then Matt, you've got some Halo news, yeah?
Yeah, the other big news that came out was that Halo 5 Guardians got announced, which will be the next in the Halo series coming out on the Xbox One. I don't think they even put a date on it, right? Or it's like 2016 are they aiming for, or something like that? I think it was pretty far out as far as I remember, maybe 15. And then the other thing they announced with it, which I'm wondering how often they can keep doing this. They are re-releasing all of the Halos again for Xbox One, but kind of packaged together.
Is that a rumor? Is that confirmed?
That I thought got confirmed this week. Let me make sure.
I read about it in a couple places. So if it's not 100% confirmed, it probably will be this week.
It probably will be soon.
That's crazy. Four games in one package.
Four games. So it'll be Halo Combat Evolved, Halo 2, Halo 3, and Halo 4 all packaged together for the Xbox One.
Oh, and maybe even like the fifth one. Was that Halo Wars or something like that?
And it'll be dubbed Halo the Master Chief Collection.
Wow.
Sure.
I wonder if it comes in a giant helmet.
I mean, I get it. Like, the thinking is that, you know, new gamers come to new consoles, so here's all the back games that you've... But, like, sometimes I just start to feel like, all right, I get it, guys. Like, let's just get these other games going out. Stop worrying about re-putting out games that we've played a million times before, but I don't know.
Beefing up the catalog is important, though.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good move.
Halo 5, no artwork or anything really teased yet. The character they showed does not look like the usual Halo, or Master Chief, so... Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens there, but do you guys care? I know I like it, but does anybody else care in this room?
I think it was great. I think 343 did a pretty good job with Halo 4. I remember our buddy Bill and I played a lot of that game together, and we had a really great experience with that.
Yeah, I think that was actually my favorite one.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought the levels were well-designed, had good weapons and stuff like that, variety of enemies.
Oh, yeah,
really
4 was great.
Great co-op. It was fun.
No Flood, if I remember correctly, which I always appreciate. Yeah.
Which I'm okay with.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Sean. Let's talk.
Yeah,
let's quit, Sean.
Let's hear about Let's Quip. So where are you guys in the process of putting this game out? How far along are you?
We're pretty far along. We have a beta up on Facebook that anybody can go and play. It's open. It's sort of small because I haven't gone wide talking about it yet because I just wanted to sort of get some feedback and, you know, fix some problems and everything, fix some bugs before we went too wide. So we've been doing this little thing, and so we have a it's playable on Facebook. It's in beta. People can play it right now. Myself and the team were working on the iOS and Android versions to come out this summer.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, that's really, you know, when you play it, that's kind of how you want to play it. You don't really want to be leashed to your computer. You know, want to make jokes and write stuff to your friends when you're on your phone. So we recognize that, and mm-hmm. that was the plan the whole time. So yeah, we've been working a lot on that and just trying to get trying to basically do iOS and Android at the same time, launch that at the same time.
Very cool. Can you tell us just like the nuts and bolts of the game for those that haven't had a chance to check it out on Facebook or haven't heard you talk about it before? Like
totally.
Essentially, like, what is Let's Quip for someone who has no clue?
Let's Quip is a competitive debating game. I say debating, it's not really like if you were in debate. I mean, if you were in debate class in high school or something like that, you'll probably have a better idea of how to play it. But it's not exactly that because we're not really trying to reward you for logic and rhetoric. In fact, those things can kind of hold you back. This is really a game about being less like the next Adlai Stevenson and being more like the next Oscar Wilde or Dorothy Parker. It's about making quick, funny little jokes about things. And then being rated on it. So the way the game works is two players go into a match and they're both given a random word from a list of 2,000 words that we generated. And we did that mostly on live casts where we just talked to the people in the chat.
Those were fun.
And got words. Yeah, it was a really fun time. It was really good. We want to do that more in the future. And so we put together this word. So you end up with random matchups. So both people are given a random word. It can end up with, like, I'm looking at a couple right here on my screen. There's a George Clooney versus narwhals. Tony the Tiger versus the Roaring Twenties. Tickle Me Elmo versus Earthworm Jim. Like, it's, you know, just random stuff. My favorite one that ever came up, I think, was probably Nicolas Cage versus bees. It was just delightful to get that to happen.
That is so classic right there.
Yeah, so you end up with these ridiculous debates, and your job is to go in and defend your word against the other person. So off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember. I had one where it was I had the word dunk, as in like basketball dunk, and my opponent, who is my best friend Sue, she had nomad. That was her word. So it was dunks versus nomad. And my argument for it was nomads could never dunk because they'd always get called for traveling.
Oh,
and I was
good.
Like, oh, snap. Oh, and I think, man, I barely won on that one. But yeah, that's like the idea. It's not like the best answer in the world, but sort of like that's the basic idea of how you play
it. That's super clever. That's a great answer.
That is a great
So once both people have submitted their arguments, and the argument that you write out has to be tweet length. Because we want it to be shareable. Mm-hmm. Like, basically, this should be a depository for really good jokes. And if you find some, you should be able to share it out to Twitter, share it out to Facebook. So we had to limit the length of your argument, which I think actually also helps with brevity being the soul of wit and all of that.
Right.
So once both people submit their short arguments, it goes out to all of the other players to vote on. So they're looking at matches, they'll see each argument, and then they vote on which one was funnier. Every time somebody votes for you, you get a point. We call the points quips. Every time you vote for somebody else, you get a quip. And that's how you get on the leaderboards.
Oh, cool.
And move through the game. Yeah.
I mean, laughter is so, when you and I talked about this, but it's awesome when a game can make you chuckle or make you laugh, and having a game in your phone that could actually like brighten your day just by looking at like the idiocy that people come up with, I think is awesome.
Yeah.
I was gonna say we talk about toilet games all the time, but you know, there are we're fairly busy people, so sometimes we only have 5-10 minutes to, you know, to play a game or to, you know, use Twitter or what have you, and if something positive or funny happens in that 5 minutes, then your day has gotten that much better. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the things we did was that we wanted to do is we wanted to give points to people who were voting. Because we want it to be a game. If you want to play our game, and the only way you want to play our game is by voting on other people's matches, like, you're a huge resource to our game. And there are. There's a bunch of people who don't feel confident in their abilities to write quips or bon mots or, like, little jokes. They don't feel confident in that, but they do feel really confident in evaluating other people's senses of humor and, you know, what they're writing. And they just do that, and they just go in and vote, and it's awesome. Like, and you can still end up, I mean, you could still technically end up on the leaderboards just by being a voter.
And maybe those people will play someday. Like,
Well, because we've seen, that's the other thing I've seen. I've seen people who, a few Americans, a few people who English wasn't their first language, come into the game, and their first week, because I've voted on basically every match that's ever come through this game, their first week, they're miserable at the game. Just can't write a sentence. Instead of writing a joke, they just write a description of the word that they were given. And you're like, that's not really in the spirit of this whole thing.
Yeah.
And maybe the grammar is weird and the punctuation maybe is non-existent. And it's just sort of like in every way, it's very elementary school. And then about a week later, they're writing and you're like, wow, you are. You're like a little Dorothy Parker. You picked up like sentence structure and how to write a joke in like 1 week and gotten really good. I want to get this into schools. I was telling some people about, you know, like making kids more literate and critical thinkers. So, yeah, but it's like it's really awesome. You get this sort of people who feel either aren't very good at it or not very confident. But after a week, they're seeing how other people do it, sort of really pick it up.
Very cool. Are you guys planning like achievements and all that for iOS and Android or?
Yeah. We want to have different levels and different, you know, different achievements. Like one of the ones we were talking about, if you write a joke that's exactly 140 characters, you know, stuff like that.
Right.
Because I think everybody who's ever used Twitter has always wanted Twitter to have achievements just so they could unlock that one.
And, yeah.
Now we're going to do it. We're beating
True. Oh, man, if they're Twitter achievements, that would be ridiculous. I've been curious about this. Do you guys have any sort of filter? I mean, what if somebody gets on there and they're just like, Nazi, and like, you know, I hate everyone. Like, well, how do you control that since it is a game with words?
Yeah, we so humor is so – there's nothing objective about humor. Humor is 100% subjective. Whether it's funny or not is completely in the eye of the beholder. Whether it's offensive or not is completely in the eye of the beholder. Because, like, you could tell a joke that's offensive, but if you tell it in the right way, it can be not offensive. It all really depends. Like, it depends on ultimately who the joke is on and that sort of thing. So what we do is – for friend matches, if you just want to challenge a friend, you don't want to do a big worldwide ranked match. Friend matches, the only people who are voting on that match are your the combined your combined friend list between you and your opponent. Those are the only people who are ever going to see that message. So if you want to play a little bit more inside, you know, poke at that other person, be a little bit more, you know, how you would talk amongst friends, you know, we're going to allow that to an extent because, you know, the only people voting on it are your friends. So if anybody is offended and they're like, nah, this is not okay, we do have ways for people. There's just on every single match, there's on every single argument, there's a big red flag. People can click that and it reports the match to us and then we can remove.
So if I just start doing like ASCII penises in all my matches,
you'll probably win. You'll almost certainly win.
There we go. Leaderboards, here I come.
we actually had to do that. We had to remove a few people for just coming in and not. They weren't even dicks. They were just sort of like, let me tell you my feelings about black people. And you're like,
oh, geez.
Let's not hear your opinions
That's what I was
ever again.
My sister makes $5,000 a month by working from home. Click this link to find out how.
Yeah,
but that's it. One of the things is we put in a tool. Our backend coder Justin put in things so that rather than just cancel the match, we can actually have it be. I can go in and be like, "Yeah, that's really offensive," and I could just have that match forfeited, and then the person who didn't write the offensive thing can win.
Oh, that's cool too. Yeah,
and so it's not like the whole match goes to loss, and you know the person who didn't do anything wrong. Yeah,
if you write a really killer one and somebody just spams it, you can actually still win and then use your joke and share it and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. That's still a possibility. We want to make sure that that's a possibility, because we know that there's always going to be griefers, there's always going to be trolls, there's always going to be like just terrible people. So yeah. You know, that's always, you know, there's always going to be that. So you just we just have to have the tools in there to make sure that it doesn't happen. I am hesitant to put in too many filters though, just because the nature of it being a comedy game, right. You don't want to be too stifling, but yeah. You also don't want it to be this. I also don't want it to be this vehicle for hatred and malice and bigotry. Like that's mm-hmm. definitely, that's the complete opposite of what I want.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So you guys are like you just said, pretty far along. And yeah. What's your timeline you think for launching on iOS Android at this point?
This summer. So hopefully late June, July.
That's exciting. That's rapidly approaching.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I really just want to sort of get it out and get into the world. I have that sort of like, you know, I feel like 9 months pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
But this game, like, wow. Just get out of me.
that's super exciting. Well, that's awesome. Yeah. Where can people find Let's Quip on the web and stuff if they want to kind of track the progress and maybe keep their eye on it for when it is coming?
You can always follow at Let's Quip on Twitter. That's where we do a lot of things. Also, following Let's Quip on Facebook. That's where a lot of the stuff is happening right now. So we have a fan page for it. You can actually launch the game from the fan page. But the fan page is where we do a lot of the updates. And then also just go in and play the game, which is, I think if you go to letsquip.com, it actually just shunts you directly over to the game. You can check it. So all you need is a Facebook for the beta. All you need is a Facebook account and Unity web player, because our whole game's done in Unity, so you have to have that plug in on your browser if you want it to work.
How has, on a technical side, how has that been doing Unity for all platforms?
Good. I mean, good. So
you're a small team, so I'd assume it alleviates a lot of certain things, but does it?
Yeah, you know. Right now we have four people on the game, but for most of development it was just the two of us, and mm-hmm. I don't do any programming. Nobody wants that, so it would just go very, very poorly. So it was mostly Sherith who was handling it, and I don't know if we would do it differently. There were certain, I think, for doing multiple platforms, Unity is perfect for that sort of thing.
Right,
it's just really, really good for that if you want to make a game and put it out on a bunch of different platforms and different things. But our game also has no 3D elements whatsoever. Right. It's completely a UI game because it's all text. It's all icons. And when we first started, there were basically no tools for that in Unity for functional UI. Oh. Like that, like a game that is all UI, there was like nothing. So we were sitting there just like being like, so how do we do any of this? Like putting in one button would take like 2 days, and it's like, this is not a good use of our time whatsoever. But in the interim, since we started, because we started this in probably, I think I wrote the design for it in June or July of last year. We started working on it in earnest in August. Since then, Unity has updated. They have a thing called NGUI. And that's the tool you use inside of Unity to build UI elements. And that has gotten way better, way better. Not to the point where I would ever make another UI game in Unity, but like better.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's
awesome.
Well, that's exciting, I always wonder about man. That.
Yeah. I like Unity. I'm a big fan. I think actually it's cool how much Unity has democratized game development.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Leveled the playing field in a lot of ways.
That is awesome. Well, we're excited to get in there. I kind of liken it to a bit of like a rap battle. Like whenever I see like the words pop up, I'm like, oh man, here I go. Like I picture somebody with like a towel, like toweling me off, and I'm like standing around a bonfire, like I'm ready.
The design document, the existing design document for this, the first section on it is reference material. So in it, you put like different things the person reading the design document should be familiar with if they want to read the rest of the design document and know all the references. So it starts with a little reference section. And the first thing on that reference section is rap battle. Yep.
Excellent. Well, then I'm in the right place mentally then for this game. Awesome. Well, let's take a quick break and come back with some reviews. We've got Titanfall Expedition DLC, Cosmic DJ, and perhaps some more stuff. So we'll be right back.
Awesome.
Okay.
We're back and we're going to talk about the Titanfall Expedition DLC, which just came out this week.
Can you guys talk about this in enough detail to make me feel like I've been playing Titanfall for the past 3 weeks?
Probably. Yeah. Okay. We'll go into great detail, but right now it's $10, and the main bit of content in the DLC is 3 new maps, and that may not seem like a lot for your money, but the good news is all 3 maps are fucking great. So there's not a stinker in the group. You have a map called Runoff, one called Swamplands, which lets you crawl around in big trees and like kind of an Endor style forest, which is awesome. And then one, which is my absolute favorite, called War Games, which is kind of a half VR map. How would you describe it, Scott?
It's imagine the training that you go through at the beginning of Titanfall. So imagine that whole simulated environment turned into like a gigantic simulation facility.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of huge buildings. It's like a blown up city, and then half the city is like not done rendering yet, so parts of it are still in like Tron mode, mm-hmm. and the other half of the city is like totally rendered and done. The best part is when you kill other players or you kill the AI, they kind of digitize and disappear
into
space.
De-res,
they de-res, which is super cool. But that map, just the layout of it, is absolutely gorgeous. The good news is now you can, if you just want to play the DLC maps, when you download the DLC, you can just kind of cycle through just those maps in your rotation. So it's like, I just want to play Expedition DLC maps. You can do that. They also added something which I thought was awesome and so simple, and something we had been complaining about. But now whoever's on your friends list, rather than just appearing blue on your map, actually appears as green on your map. So you can actually keep track of your friends and where your friends are and actually work together a lot easier, which is one of the problems I always had with the game. It's just so fast and so hectic. You could never really tell your friends like what you're going to do or go off together and do something because everything is so fast. So now I could actually see Scott on the map and be like, I'm coming to you. And like, you know, mm-hmm. we could actually coordinate and do things together.
Did that last night. I was getting destroyed by an enemy Titan. And so I ran away, but I drew him toward you so that we kind of came around a corner, and then you were standing there around the corner, and then he encountered you and had to like fight both of us. So it was like a good strategy because I knew you were there and I knew what you were doing. So we could coordinate better. It was really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you don't, you know, you're not able to get a full team together and you only have a couple friends on, and you know, the competition's picking up a bit in that
game.
It's
fierce. Yeah.
It's pretty brutal right now.
There are a lot of times where I would call down the Titan, get into it, and then instantly I'd be ejecting again because someone would have already obliterated it or something.
Yeah, people have gotten pretty good at that game. The other thing I do have to say is a lot of little buggy things with the game that were kind of troubling it in the beginning, they appear to have been fixed, like a lot of the party bugs and such. Mm-hmm. We didn't really have that many problems playing last night, which was good.
There's a bunch of UI fixes, too, that they did.
Yeah, everything just felt a bit smoother, and now you can customize your loadouts and actually name your loadouts per map type. So if you're playing like a Capture the Flag map, you'll have special Capture the Flag customizable Titans that you can like choose from and name them whatever you want. So it just feels like a lot more complete with the latest patch and with this latest batch of DLC, which is really nice. And like I said, the maps are awesome. They're so much fun. I played them for probably, I don't know, a couple hours yesterday, just straight over and over and over again, and they didn't get boring or anything like that. And so,
it's really cool. There are even some minor UI things. Like I noticed on the main menu of the game, like, or when you're in between matches, there is there's like now a button call out for you to open up the party menu. So you like tap the left trigger or whatever, and then it snaps the party app to the right side of the screen so that you can go to it without having to back out to the guide or say, you know, Xbox Snap Party or something like that.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, in the aftermatch stats, there are elements where you can go back and see the last match stats quickly. I noticed they added something to the game where there's a card in the game, a burn card called Rematch. And what it does is you can, if you die, you play the Rematch card and it revives you where you died. So you could kind of quickly get revenge on the player that killed you. And so if somebody used one of those cards against you, you get like a little UI notification, you know, Rematch, in progress or something. So mm-hmm. they must have found out that there was something a little too unbalanced about that, where an enemy could respawn right behind you again and come back and kill you. So kind of a lot of balance and minor tweaks, but they're really listening. And I think that this game in particular has done more of that than really any game that I've seen prior. Mass Effect 3 did a lot of that kind of stuff too, the multiplayer element. They added a bunch of UI tweaks and map fixes and things that just generally made the game better and more accessible to the stats and information.
No, I agree. And still just a ton of fun. I just was looking at sales and stuff like that, and it's still been, you know, there's not a lot of new AAA games out right now, but for the past 2 months, it has been the number one AAA game, you know, sold, mm-hmm. which is great. I think PlayStation 4 is still outselling Xbox One for the yes. past few months, but the Titanfall's doing pretty well, so yeah. I'm happy for them.
The only other thing I wanted to say about that Swamplands level, which I think is really cool, and I know they did this on purpose because it works, is that there's a bunch of really tall trees, so you're kind of like in a jungle, like a swamp, but all of the trees are close enough that if you are sort of coordinated enough, you can sort of wall run between the trees to get across the level.
Yeah, you can do a little of the old platformy goodness on that.
Yeah,
that
but level. Because the touch points are so small, you kind of feel cool when you're doing it. If you hit like three trees in a row while you're navigating, it's really neat. And then they put these platforms high up in the air that you can kind of jump onto and get a vantage point and stuff like that. So
yeah, I do have to agree. The parkour stuff in war games is awesome. It's all designed to like maximize movement, pilot movement. So you yeah. can zip around that level like crazy and just like jump from wall to wall to wall and get around very quickly.
I noticed that in Runoff and war games, the level design has more sort of dimensionality to it. So, and that's not just like, you know, run on the walls to get higher. The buildings themselves have sort of more stories, and the layouts are more difficult to navigate, and there's kind of more points of, you know, egress and stuff like that. So it's
I agree. They're a bit more complicated. There's like different, you know, fields of fire you can kind of take advantage of.
Yeah.
You can be up high. You can be like underneath a bridge. There's definitely a lot going on with the maps, which I think is good for the future. Cause I mean, I know they're coming out with several more map packs. So if this is kind of if this is kind of what we're going to be getting for the next couple of months, then I'm going to be pretty happy.
Yeah.
So.
And I can't wait for that whole, that hashtag thing, you know, where we can put in like, just tell people, hey, you know, put in like nerd appropriate and then it'll join you to our game. You know, that's yeah. supposed to be coming in the future. So I'm looking forward to that too.
That's super happy. I have a quick story about Titanfall and
it
deals with real life. I was at Target right before you and I started playing, and I was with my wife, and she in line was like, hey, what time do you have to be back to play Titanfall with Scott? And the kid checking me out, like kind of looked up from checking us out and went, Titanfall. And I'm like, he goes, yeah, he goes, are you playing that game? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, how you liking those low frame rates and that crappy UI? And he totally trolled me in real life.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, Target guy. I was like, actually, I really like the game. He's like, sorry, I'm a bit of a PS4 fanboy.
And oh,
like,
you don't say.
Oh, wow. Are we going to like fight in the parking lot now? I just love how the console war, like people feel obligated to actually argue about it. Like they're both awesome systems. Just embrace them. It's not like the fucking Cold War. You don't have to pick a side.
It's why I wish there was a block button in real life.
Yeah.
Yes. Be like, sorry, dude, you're blocked. And you just disappear.
Or just put like a paper bag over his head and spin him around a few times. Like, I'm going to put this on you, spin you around, and you'll go away. But anyway, so that was my real life Titanfall story.
Yeah, totally.
Let's talk about Cosmic DJ, because I haven't played this yet, and you guys have been talking about it since PAX, so I want to know more.
Yeah, so, okay, Cosmic DJ is a game that we played at PAX on the iPad, and it's kind of a musical adventure where it's not like Fract, so let me get that out of the way real quick. Fract is sort of a first-person 3D adventure game, and this is more like they give you some music, they give you a sequencer to play with and some instruments to create music on, and then it kind of takes you through this narrative of the game while you're creating music. And it's a little simpler from a music creation perspective than Fracht is. So I think this is sort of more intended to be a casual experience than the musical experience of Fracht. And what I played a preview of it because they went into Steam Early Access Beta earlier this week. And the humor is sort of more in line with the humor of jazz punk. So that's I don't want to draw too many comparisons, but it's kind of that weird quirkiness. I played a level where they take you through this narrative where you need to help bring music back to the world because like some evil DJ being like kind of brought his terrible jams to the universe. So you're trying to
problem that we have right now.
Yeah.
In the world.
Yeah. So you're trying to like repair the jam antennas or whatever to bring back the good music or whatever. So in like the first narrative arc that I played, I was trying to get this band back together by telling them how cool it is to be in a band and that they don't need to be at their desk jobs or whatever. So basically to round up each band member, you create like a jam for them using a bunch of sound banks and stuff like that. And then you get the band back together and you create like a fourth song. So I created three songs with each band member. And then I created one song to kind of cap it off with all of the band members and their instruments. And then what's really cool about this game, which we saw on the iPad, is that after you create your song, the game takes your song and sort of adds a little polish to it. And then you can add a photo to it, give it a artist name and a title track. And then you can export the song to MP3. And then they even said that on the iPad, you could export your song to SoundCloud. So you can like share your music with other people, which I thought was really cool. And the thing that was different, Matt, than what we played at PAX is that I did the four songs, and then when it went to go compile the final song, it took elements from all four songs, and then it actually kind of remixed it a little bit too. So my final song ended up sounding better than any of the four songs that I made. It kind of like, it somehow took the best parts of the four songs and made it into one super awesome song.
That's really awesome. Cool.
Yeah, it's cool. So I think if I remember, and I'll say this to my future self when I'm editing this later, I'll play the song that I created, you know, sort of my first run out of the gate at this. I'll play it during the break. And you can hear the song that I put together with my first formal go with Cosmic DJ.
Yeah, she really, when we did the demo with them, she really struck me by saying that this game was not so much about being like, you know, an immersive music game or anything like that, which is what Fracht is and does an amazing job at, but is really just about teaching people who otherwise feel like they could never play a song or make a song how to make music. And I was like, that's really kind of amazing. And it did a good job in the demo. So I'm happy to hear that they made it even more fun and like even more of a way to like get through it, like gamify it a little bit more, I guess, is the way it sounds.
Yeah. And then I forgot to mention they have like the two control schemes. Did you use both of the control schemes when you played?
Yeah. So I started on the pads and then I moved to the like actual sequencer.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I kind of was like back in the kind of groove, you know, pun intended, I went back to playing on the pads again and had a really good time playing. Because when you play on the pads, so when I played on the sequencer, the top of the screen didn't really react to the step sequencer.
Mm-hmm.
But when I played on the pads, they did. And I don't know if that's changed at all, but that like the whole, so that like, it's hard to describe, I guess, the UI, but there's four pads on the bottom and you can, they each like trigger a different sound.
It's
or
like a drum machine almost.
Instrument.
Just tap on them. Yeah.
And as you play them, there's this animation on the top of the screen that's related to whatever your story is. Mm-hmm. And that animation will like change out and do things while you're playing the pads. So they'll react to the music that you're playing. And it was really fun and interesting. And you kind of miss out on it when you're doing the step sequencer, unless that's changed. That doesn't happen as much.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that there in the graphic, as far as the animations go at the top of the screen, there's a whole lot more going on.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like this, it's a crazy neon explosion of, you know, laser beams and weird, weird characters. Like, that's why it kind of reminds me of jazz punk. There's even a sort of a weird synthesized narrator voice that is talking you through what's happening in the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not to say that it's the same type of humor, but it kind of remind it would be it would fit well into that same family of bizarre, humorous artwork and sort of abstract ideas, like abstract ways to represent, you know, avatars and people and objects as far as the graphics go. But it's I thought it was really cool. And so, like I said, it's in Steam Early Access right now. What we played was a demo was on a tablet, so I'm sure they have plans to bring it back to you know, to tablets and stuff like that. Let's see. I think that's all the information I have right now. I think if you wanted to get involved with this game straight away, probably the easiest way would be to get involved with the Steam Early Access program. It's Cosmic DJ. I don't remember the name of the company. I'm really bad about this one.
It's Gleek.
Gleek, yeah.
Devolver Digital's putting it out.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Thank you, Sean, for doing our work for us on this program.
I've been sitting here reading the Steam page being like, oh, what is this? This looks incredible. I should pick this up right this second.
It's just really weird and trippy, and it's not meant to be something that you know, so many games, it's like, oh, I got to get the best score. I got to be the best at this. And really, the purpose of this game is just to get in, have fun, create music, share music with your friends.
Yeah.
I think the thing that was maybe unintentionally interesting about our demo experiences is that Kat, the person that was at the booth kind of helping people play through the game.
Who was a human.
She was a human, yeah.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, she was really cool. But when Matt and I both played separately, she sits there so that she had like a headphones plugged in, but split into two so that you could listen and she could listen as well. And what's cool is that you're sitting there making music and she's just kind of rocking out with you while you're making the music.
Yeah.
And I realized that it was awkward to create music in front of another person. You know,
yeah, I was going to ask if it felt different just sitting in your living room.
Yeah. Whatever. It's different when I'm playing by myself, cause I can kind of experiment. But when I felt like it was, I don't want to make this weird, but it was sort of an intimate experience that I was sitting with
one other person and
creating music. And she was reacting to the music instantly as we were, as you know, kind of progressing through the demo.
That's cool. Yeah. It feels very futuristic from what you're just describing. The whole experience feels very like unlike anything I've ever done before, so I'm definitely going to pick it up.
Yeah, it's just unique and different and fun, and I would encourage people to check it out if you have any interest at all in sort of getting into music or creating it, or just kind of messing around with some tools that are very accessible to use. And then you can share your songs with other people. And all.
Yeah, it shares out to SoundCloud, or you can just dump an MP3, and there's like a few other services I think they're using, right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty awesome. I'm glad. I'm definitely going to go pick it up. I didn't know it already come out. So
it seems like one of those games that would be played in the bar from Hackers, which instantly makes me want to play it more.
So yeah.
Can this game be played in the bar from Hackers? If yes, then I will buy.
It would definitely be at home there.
Yeah.
And then I'm obligated to say, looks like I'm on top.
Yeah, definitely. Check it out. Cosmic DJ.
Well, cool. Looks like we let's go ahead and just jump to our take a quick break and jump back with our Naquato, which was asking about superhero TV. So we'll be back with that.
Scott, play your Cosmic DJ jam here.
Sorry. All right. I'll talk over each other. My bad. So the Naquato this week I made up, which has been a while since I've done. I haven't done that quite a while, actually. I can't think of the last one I did. It was because the new trailers have come out for Gotham, which will be a Fox show, and Flash, which is a CW show. And the question is, with Gotham, Flash, and Arrow all airing TV shows this fall... Is that right? Yeah, all airing this TV shows this fall. What hero team would you like to see get a TV debut? You know, also, of course, I forgot to put it in the question, but S.H.I.E.L.D. and all those are coming out. And Agent Carter, which I'm confused about being a TV show, but sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a summer replacement.
Is that what it is?
Until S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back, yeah.
Yeah, they're splitting the S.H.I.E.L.D. season in half, and then they're going to put Agent Carter in there.
That's fine. Okay. I thought they were going to, like, concurrently run a second sort of S.H.I.E.L.D. show. I was like, maybe make the first one perfect, guys, before we really jump on the second one. All right. So first up, we've got Haggis McHaggis. Haggis McHaggis.
There we go.
This is a great name. Thank you, Haggis, for writing us.
I would like to see Oracle pop up in all these shows as a recurring character. That would be amazing if Oracle... So for those of you that don't know, Oracle was Barbara, right?
From Barbara Gordon, yeah.
Barbara Gordon, after she gets paralyzed by Joker.
Spoiler.
Which is a 40-year-old spoiler. So please go read comics.
Joke in 86.
If you have not read that yet, I'm sorry. I don't know.
What have you done?
So Oracle is like she becomes basically the computer system for Batman. Like she's like a hacker that like starts tracking everything and hacking into systems and doing all this stuff and being kind of the information center for Batman. Right? I'm not mangling
absolutely
this.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
And it would be pretty amazing to see her start like maybe the well you couldn't really do the beginnings of Oracle in Gotham because Joker's not there yet, but. It'd be cool to see like Barbara Gordon in that show. It'd be cool to see her show up in Flash, and I think she'd fit more in the Flash and Arrow series, kind of in that vein of sort of teenage pop comic book shows.
I think she was on that one show,
Bird of Prey.
Bird of Prey, yeah. I remember she
or
was
Birds
one of,
of Prey, rather.
Yeah, Birds plural. Of Prey. She was one of the main characters on that.
She
one.
Was, yeah.
Disappeared sadly after a season.
I know.
I have to gush for a second about Arrow. I've been kind of plowing through the second season right now. No, and I am like, I am shocked that I like this show. This show is essentially the Batman show I always wished existed.
Yeah.
And the only thing I'm going to say about it, it's super CW. It's very overly dramatic, you know, kind of soap opera.
That's ultimately why I stopped.
Yeah, but by the second season.
Good. Yeah.
The fight choreography is honestly, I think, the best I've ever seen on TV. So, like, when the fights actually break out, you actually believe that the actors are the ones performing a lot of their stunts and a lot of the action. So, just watching it, and it's honestly, it's better than a lot of films. So, like, the fights will go on for 4 or 5, you know, sometimes 10 minutes of people just, like, beating the crap out of each other. And it's so well choreographed. So even just from that perspective, I'm really, really...
I watched 5 episodes of the show and I was like, okay, so the show's just going to be like about a brooding Green Arrow character who's like sometimes Green Arrow. And then apparently I stopped and then they started introducing like Deadshot and like all these like villains. And like I apparently stopped right before it became like a DC Comics show and after they had done all the introduction. So,
oh yeah, it's crazy. Now there's like Deathstroke and Ra's al Ghul and everybody from the comics is in it now, which is super cool.
Yeah, but anyway. I like every character on that show except anybody with the last name of Lance.
Yeah, right.
I just kept being like, please stop it with this family. Can't they just die? They're the worst family ever. The show immediately, as soon as there's a conversation between Detective Lance and Lana Lance?
I think Laura.
Laura Lance.
Yeah.
And his daughter. Anytime they get together, I would just like fast forward through it and be like, nope, there is no information they could possibly give that is worth sitting through this section of the show.
Oh, man.
I would rather watch the 5-minute workout scenes. the obligatory 5-minute.
Oh, with the bar.
Ollie's going to take his shirt off and he's going to do pull-ups on a bar where the bar jumps from thing to thing while music plays.
Yeah, every time my wife walks in,
large hunk of a man,
and that's playing. My wife is obviously mesmerized by that, and she'll like look at that as she walks in the room, and I'll kind of just look at her and be like, "I could do that," and laughter ensues. But next up is Alyssa, who's Elizabeth, and she says, I think we can all agree it's time to bring back the terror that flaps in the night, Darkwing Duck.
Nice.
Okay with that.
Oh, man.
Our pal Robert Freemering, Mr. Slick, says, I'm excited for Gotham and Constantine. I would like to see a series about Joel and Ellie from The Last of Us by Showtime or AMC. I think that would be very conducive to those two networks.
Yeah, I could see that too.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, Constantine's coming too. I forgot to mention that one as well.
I don't know much about the Hellblazer comics, unfortunately. I never really read them.
Very
good.
Very
good?
Very noir-y.
Anything from the 90s. Yeah. It's just like they just had several incredible runs.
Well, it was didn't Ellis write it for a little while, right?
Yeah, or... his first
Was it Warren Ellis or was it Garth Ennis?
It was Garth Ennis.
Garth Ennis.
He basically was not that much of a well-known comic book writer, and they hired him to come and take over Constantine. And he came in, and his first storyline was like something about smoke, up in smoke. It's one of my favorite graphic novels of all time, compilations. But basically, he comes into to the Constantine to the series, and is just sort of like, I'm going to shake everything up and change the entire concept of this, and it's incredible. Like, it's one of the most brilliant. If they can follow anything like that, it would be that show is going to be just killer.
This is a total sidebar, but it's related to what you just said, so we should just open a comic book podcast and do it then. But I read a thing about Alan Moore, and it was the same thing with Alan Moore. Basically, DC had a Swamp Thing, and it was failing. And they were just like going to let it go, essentially just be like, well, whatever, we don't even care anymore. And they were like, well, we'll hire this unknown dude out of England to just write it for a little bit, see if we can limp it along. And Alan Moore came and wrote his first run on Swamp Thing, and it became such like an epic, amazing series that
it's so good.
He changed everything. He completely
Context of that character. Yeah.
It was amazing. So that was the same exact thing though, where they just hired this unknown guy who ends up becoming this like huge writer that you know has basically won so many ridiculous amounts of awards that it's insane. So
I found it. The name of that series, it was issues 41 through 46 of Hellblazer, Garth Ennis. It was called Dangerous Habits.
Awesome.
And it will blow your mind. Even if you've never read any Hellblazer, you could start there, and it's genius.
Cool.
Awesome. Yeah.
Eric at eChap 33 says, Wonder Woman, Marvel is already already on a talking raccoon and a guy who shrinks into an ant. DC needs to step up its game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she will be in the new Batman Superman debacle.
Oh, boy. We'll see.
You can hear my confidence in that movie.
It'll look gorgeous.
It will. It will.
The used gamers at the used gamers say would love a standalone Suicide Squad show, which would be crazy but cool. Yeah. Or practical effects heavy adaptation of Saga a la Farscape.
Man, Saga.
Saga would be incredible.
It would have to be like an HBO show though.
Yeah.
And the most expensive show ever created.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be insane. There's a lot of stuff that happens in that book that just could not happen on TV. But it'd be amazing.
I'm going to go ahead and say my answer before everyone takes it. Why The Last Man?
They've been trying to get that done for a while.
I know. I would love to see that. On like an AMC or on a HBO or something like that, because it would need to be relatively adult and not botched up by the CW. Justin Banks at Midtown 583 says Green Lantern. Says Jeff Johns threw in an Easter egg with the Ferris airstrip in the Flash TV show, cast Nathan Fillion. Everybody wants Nathan Fillion and everything.
Look, man, that Blackest Night and all the series leading up to Blackest Night are actually a really great Green Lantern series. Like, it's a character that, and we talked about this when it was out, like, it's a character that otherwise is super hokey and kind of dumb, and it just was written really well and done really well. They could make a really cool TV show out of it, but we'll see. I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah.
I'm just really excited for the Netflix Marvel series that they're going to be doing. Daredevil,
Daredevil,
Hawkeye, Iron Fist, each one is going to be its own little series about the Hell's Kitchen heroes.
Yeah.
Isn't that awesome?
That's going to be incredible.
So cool they're doing that.
Our pal Hillary says She-Ra, Princess of Power, of course. I think that could be great.
That could be.
Like a live action
one or something.
It'd be really good.
Yeah, it's smart. I like that.
Andrew Baker at abakern7. Wonder Woman, if she doesn't get her own movie, then she deserves something. After the last 300 movie, cast Eva Green.
Man, Eva Green. I actually never saw that 300 movie.
You still haven't seen it?
I never saw it.
Did we make fun of you so badly you didn't go?
Yeah, you made fun of me, and then no one would fucking go with me. I was just like, fine, I'm just not going to go see it. So I'm waiting, and I'm going to wear a loincloth and watch it in my living room
with
a giant turkey leg in my hand.
Ash would be like, we'd be at dinner, and Ash would be like, you guys want to go see the 300 movie?
Everyone would just slowly look at me.
No.
Like,
No, why we do don't.
All right. At Clippy Joel says, what? I don't
Chip.
The guy is a squirrel with a green lantern ring. Not sure about you, but that's a recipe for the whole family to enjoy. God, really? Is that a thing?
Yeah, because it's like Green Lantern's all aliens. I mean, if you said they're going to put a tree guy in the movie that just says, "I am Groot" all the time, you'd probably think that would
true.
Be dumb, too. So.
I know. You're right. Damn your rightness.
Did anybody on this list point out like the obvious one, which is it's only been a couple of weeks since, or I mean, it's been at least a few weeks since the Spider-Man movie was released. Maybe it's time to reboot it. but like do some changes and do Peter Porker, the Spider-Ham.
Oh my gosh, I remember Ham Porker from the What Ifs.
Yeah, man. That's clearly the one that should get done next.
It's not, I don't, somebody I thought, oh yeah, it's coming up. Somebody does mention a Spider-Man, but not Peter Porker.
Well, then they're wrong. Because it has to be Peter Porker.
I agree.
Let's see. Sam Nee at Eating Green Egg says, not to answer the question, but I am so excited for Gotham.
I think it's going to be good.
Yeah,
I'm excited for it.
Trailer looks great.
Although, all the little kid things, I'm not sure how that's going to pan out.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was cool, though. I'm apparently the only one who got excited when they ran through all the villains and they said before Penguin, before Riddler, like all those actors look perfect. Like it was like a really great casting along with it looking kind of neat. I'm okay with it. I know the whole, I know it's hokey to do like the, hey, before they were the interesting character that you actually like, let's see what they were like when they were just like, you know, eating peanut butter and jelly. Like, I get why that's crappy, but at the same time, I think it looks good. Like, it could just be a really great detective story that introduces you to some of these characters' backgrounds. So,
Hey, guys, want to hear a riddle? It's that guy who hangs out on the street asking people riddles.
He's just had fucking little kid birthday parties. Like, you kids are annoying. I'm going to become a villain.
He's there just hiding all the presents. He just grabs all the presents at birthday parties and hides them. Oh, good luck finding that one behind the couch again. So I'll answer mine. I actually would like to see the Inhumans get their own series.
Really?
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah.
I think that would be pretty cool. I think that it's a weird. I think it's too weird of a concept to do in 2 hours on a movie. But I think you could do like a cool lead up and tie it off a shield and do like a cool Inhumans show. So
that'd be cool.
That is mine.
Cool.
Thief of Hearts at Thief of Hearts says Runaways. Get Jim Henson Creature Shop to do Old Lace, mostly unknown talent for the kids. That would actually be pretty cool too.
I would definitely watch that.
Hell yeah. That'd be a good one. Justin, who's at Gigawatt Conduit on Twitter, says, would love to see Blue Beetle get his own show or Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Oh man,
yeah, there
you
go.
Like a Blue Beetle mixed with like that show The Bridge. Because that basically is like it's the same location for Blue Beetle.
Did you watch The Bridge?
I haven't watched it yet, but it looked really interesting to me. I want to watch the American version, with the between El Paso and
I watched 3 episodes and never got to finish it, and it was awesome for the 3 episodes I saw.
Yeah.
Sean, do you have an answer to this question?
Yeah.
Oh, I would. If I had to pick one, I think I would probably go with. I don't know if you guys read Eric Powell's The Goon.
I know who The Goon is, but I haven't read it.
The Goon would be such a great, funny action horror like comic show. I think. Yeah. Like, I think there's a lot of interesting things you could do with it. I know right now they're trying to sell the cartoon. The company that did all of the Blur videos.
Oh, okay.
Star Wars,
Old Republic. Blur does all the like the super high end CG.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the 90s Britpop band.
No. Although the reason why they're called Blur Studios, my understanding is because they do all of the videos for CGI band
Gorilla.
Oh, for Gorillas.
The Gorillas. Yeah. It's the same people who did
that.
And the original Tank Girl comic book. Comic and everything. So, they're working on. They did a Kickstarter to do an animatic of the movie.
Oh, for the Goon. Yeah, I remember that.
And they did Paul Giamatti as Frankie, the Goon's sidekick, which is just all of the stuff was really really cool. And they're still working on that. And I'd love to see that turned into a full show because
that'd be cool.
That comic's incredible.
Cool. Let's see. At Michael Coles, who is now 100% not Alistair. says Luke Cage and Iron Fist, the heroes for hire. Their power levels and stories would work well on a TV budget, and it's easily... Is that cut off?
Easily.
Easily done?
Easily will easily be done, because they are both going to be...
Congratulations! Yeah, you're getting that. Yeah, that's
fill in the blank.
I had the pleasure of telling him that this was actually happening. And he was like, really? I was like, your dreams just came true, because it just got announced.
Did you take credit for it? Like,
I did. I'm like, this was
I put in a couple of calls.
Yeah.
Can I do mine? I'm going to go ahead and do mine.
Please go for it.
So for mine, for something that already existed, I would like to see something. I really like the first season of Human Target. I thought that was a good show.
Yeah.
Because they weren't like, they had no special abilities. They were just kind of all clever in their synergy. Like the three of them played well off one another. And I thought all the characters were really good in that. And then the other only thing I thought of is it would be really tricky to do this, but I would like to see another comedy spy show like Get Smart, but I don't know how you replace Don Adams, you know.
Yeah,
but something like that, something that doesn't take itself so seriously. So I guess those two things kind of go together, because Human Target had some humor too, and that's what made the show good.
Have you read Chew yet?
No, not yet. I read the first issue.
Okay, cool. Sense of humor, that's all I was thinking.
Good. All right,
cool. So Road, who's that Road guy, just says Punisher.
We're gonna do like the old 80s movie Punisher, right? The version
the Dolph
with,
Lundgren.
Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, that would... See, I've never been a huge Punisher fan. I always just thought he was a little too cut and dry, and I don't think you could have him running around just murdering people every week. I guess you could.
I thought he was too cut and dry.
The last movie, was incredible.
Thomas Jane.
Yeah. No, the one after that.
The guy from Rome. What's his name? Yeah,
it's like most violent movie I've ever seen, and it's so good. Like, it's really like if you like the Judge Dredd movie.
Uh huh.
Oh, I love Judge Dredd.
Definitely like the Punisher. What was it called? Warzone. I want to say it was called Warzone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible.
I saw that one was pretty good. As a kid, he was always kind of like a character I never really identified with. You know, I wasn't into like that style of hero when I was like growing up reading a lot of comics.
Well, I mean, he came out of the 80s like hyper violent, you know, craziness. But for me, I feel like you could ground that character and make a good show out of it pretty easily.
Yeah.
Because like Scott said, he has no power. He just has a ridiculous arsenal. Like, he literally, until very recently in the comics, was like not unkillable because he had some special power. He was unkillable because he would literally just like will himself through getting shot twice and then like, you know, heal himself up while he was just bleeding out in a building somewhere. Like, it was kind of
special
ridiculous.
Power is lack of giving a shit.
Yeah, like essentially that's what it was. It was just like, I'm just going to keep going. I don't care anymore. So... Yeah, I don't know. I think it could be done. I think it could be interesting.
Definitely.
Tasman at Tasman put in a last minute answer. Thank God. It would probably be more HBO than anything, but I honestly want more Orgasmo.
And what a great place to finish.
Yeah. Pun intended.
Ah, there you go.
Well, ah, to finish. I get it.
Hey.
Call out.
Oh, all right, God. Ash.
All right. So thank you guys for listening to episode 153 of the Rated NA podcast. You guys can find us on Twitter, and that is @NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and that is Matt, Scott, Ash, and Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. You can find us on Facebook, and that is /NerdAppropriate. Sean, where can people find you?
Oh. They can find me on @SeanTheBaptiste on Twitter, or just follow @Let'sQuip.
Cool.
Twitter.
Well, thanks for coming by, man.
Thanks for having me. This is always the funnest thing ever.
Awesome.
Too kind.
As a regular listener, it is a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, thanks for listening.
So. This is actually the first one Sean and I have been able to be on at the same time.
Yeah, I know. Wow, it's weird, right?
Yeah.
You're usually like
called
away.
This is like the fourth or something I've been on. Yeah, this is the first time.
Magically off walking the dog someplace.
Walking the dog.
just on silent in the background.
The whole time.
That's the secret is that I'm usually actually always here when you guys record. I just don't always get on the mic.
Whoa.
Because I'm busy.
TMI.
All right, guys. See you later.
Have a good week. We'll be right back.
think Matt is still walking his dog right now. Furiously.
He was here. He'll be back.
I told Shauna that I think walking dog is code for furious masturbation. So every time Matt says he has to walk the dog, that's what
he just puts his mic on mute and he listens to us.
We walk into the dog for 5 more minutes.
You guys just keep talking.
Yeah,
when you guys talk about it, it ruins it.
I just walked the shit out of that dog.
Now I'm placid. Damn you guys.